Good afternoon. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 13th of August. Some schools in the state of Wisconsin have already started their sessions and others are soon to begin. So we thought it would be a perfect time to talk about a number of issues in education. This really interesting program in Madison, maybe someday it will expand to the whole state. Madison is going to be the 12th city for a program that's titled Any Given Child. It's a long-range arts education plan to reach every public school student in grades K through 8. We'll look at Common Core standards. What's the timeline on those? More private and religious schools joining in a new statewide voucher program. And also a grant to help continue current early childhood programs throughout the state. Our guest this hour, he's been with us many times before as we talk about education, is Steve Correa. He is a professor, associate professor of education at St. Norbert College, and he comes from a long line of teachers. He also was a high school social studies teacher, and his research interests include the history of school reform, efforts over the last 100 years is what he's been examining. He's also interested in the evolution of measuring successful schools and the seemingly never-ending changing expectations of high schools. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Correa on any of those subjects or others. 800-486-8655 is our number always. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, where you are always welcome to leave messages for us, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Steve Correa, hello again. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, hello again. Very glad to be here, as always.
Happy almost beginning of the school year.
It is almost here, yeah.
I know. I always want to go back to school shopping. I really do. I miss
it. It's amazing how attitudes change with age.
I know.
I don't know if too many 12-year-olds would be that enthusiastic, but boy, I'll tell you, at a certain age, it's so exciting.
Isn't that the truth? I want to start with arts in schools in the state. I was interested in this program, Madison being selected the 12th city in the country for this Any Given Child program, which is a big endeavor from the Kennedy Center, and they are hopeful that it will help close an achievement gap and get students excited about school. Do you have a handle, Professor Correa, of how many arts programs have been cut because of budget concerns? And the second question, of course, is how important they are to education.
Well, and as attention has swung to things that are more easily quantifiably measured, reading scores, math performance, skills-based activities, and school-based learning. The arts, by definition, aren't easily measured. Now, perhaps one could count somebody's use of meter or measure. Generally, the arts we think of as, that's humanities, that's human expression. And they just don't receive the attention. They don't receive the attention by intention because of the challenges of measuring those.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody really has done. And this is, for anybody listening out there that occasionally has a beef with DPI, this is one where DPI should really, we should be better understanding how DPI has changed over the years. Now, this is, they've only had to do this because their funding has been cut and what they've been told to concentrate on has changed. But they used to have dedicated consultants that had significant budgets to be able to go around the state and provide the very kind of support and attention that Madison is now receiving from an outside group. This is the Kennedy Center. And they used to have these in social studies, and they still do, but they just don't quite have the energy, the budget, the attention, the staffs to be able to do this. Of course, the arts are alive in many schools in Wisconsin. My children participated in this wonderful summer Shakespeare program at Appleton North High School. I finally found out where my Kingdom for a Horse came from. And this wonderful program and the strings program in the Appleton schools, But these are derived from individuals, a Mr. Palmer in the arts, the Shakespeare program, and really derived from Lawrence University with the music program. And they're uneven at best in the state of Wisconsin. So this Madison program is very impressive because, and I loved reading the press release, because this group is up front, the Kennedy Center group. They say, we don't bring money, we bring expertise.
Yes.
And so really what they're trying to do is incubate a foundation, and a strong foundation, so that the arts will thrive from this point forward and not be able to throw money at it and then leave. So they're really hoping to create an infrastructure for arts and relate that to overall student academic achievement. No short order there.
Right.
But they're Madison should be very proud and excited about the possibilities to come with this.
The director of programming for the Overture Center for the Arts, one of the organizations involved in this, made this comment: arts can help close the achievement gap. From what you just said, I assume that we don't really know if that's the case. It's hard to not believe that arts certainly can keep students in school. That was my case. If it weren't for drama and theater and doing productions and speech activities, school would have been not terribly exciting for me. I love doing all of those things, and I would imagine that it keeps many students excited about school.
And I think anyone that has been around early adolescence or adolescence, or frankly, my youngest child was involved in a kinder music program and an early childhood program once, and you see all the parts of the child, whether, you know, it's the physical part, they dance, they move, they get excited, and it's so much more holistic. And frankly, in schools, the humanities don't really receive the attention. And it is exciting, and we all do like that. It's again, the human condition. Now, the one thing, though, that we do need to be careful about is that it is hard to be able to say that it will close the achievement gap. What it more likely will do will be improve academic performance for all students. But if you note, to close the academic or the achievement gap among racial groups, that's a different type of expectation. We want students to improve their academic performance, absolutely, and we want to be able to help all students strive at a higher level. But a funny thing happens when you introduce really good programs like this. It does help lower performing students to do better. It does. They get excited. They make connections. Oh, Thomas Jefferson played Mozart. Oh, he did all he could to be able to get sheet music. I just got done reading a book, as an aside, about Jefferson entertaining British officers that were captured at the Battle of Saratoga at Monticello, and they brought news to Jefferson about Mozart, and they were able to play some of Mozart's music. So to connect that with Ein Klein Nacht music and the Declaration of Independence, of course students are going to, oh, it's so exciting. However, students that are also high-achieving students will also make those connections and will also then improve their academic performance.
Mm-hmm.
So it is perhaps not accurate to say it will close the achievement gap. It is probably more accurate to say it will increase the academic performance across the board. And that's a good thing.
That is a good thing, because we're covering many different areas during this hour. I want to take calls as they come in and are pertinent to what we're talking about. So let's go to some phone calls. Keith in Verona. Hi, Keith.
Hi there.
Hi.
So I have a question about, you mentioned closing the achievement gap and gave some racial context for that, but how does funding for gifted programs that are typically in STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, impact funding for gifted musicians, gifted artists in Wisconsin?
Well, they typically don't come from the same sources. The Kennedy Center, to my knowledge, is not involved in any STEM programs, those science, technology, engineering, and mathematics programs. So broadly speaking, you're probably talking apples and oranges with those kind of things. What we do know is students that get extra attention and are able to have their imaginations and they're able to get excited about what they're doing do perform better. So we know that. I think the area where sometimes we overpromise is where we indicate to people that this will be a cure-all or this will close this particular gap. And frankly, there's probably not any one particular area that does that. It's probably as much the attention and the chance for the student to try something new and the chance to get excited and get a lot of positive reinforcement that result in that. Then, of course, the great thing about this program coming to Madison is they're trying to put in this thing to be able to last a long time and not just be, which is valuable, but not as valuable as a two-week sort of summer program. So teasing out one particular advantage in the humanities versus the sciences, they aren't really quite the same, but the funding sources from those are also very, very different.
Thank you so much for the call. We are covering a number of different education topics with Professor Correa because school is starting and there are a lot of issues that will affect the way we teach students in the state of Wisconsin. Our phone number, you can talk about the arts certainly all hour long, but we'll move into some other subjects here. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Can you talk a bit, Professor Correa, about these? We've heard about these. I don't know if they're being implemented right now in schools around Wisconsin. And I don't think many of us have an idea of what exactly these Common Core standards are. What are they? Are we going to see them in the fall?
And that's a really good question because I think a lot of people are sort of saying, hey, wait a minute, what's going on with that? The Common Core standards was an attempt, or is an attempt, primarily among state governors. It has since become, let's say, casually adopted by Arne Duncan and the Obama administration as paralleling some of their initiatives with Race to the Top. But I guess the short version of Common Core is it was the idea that all the states would voluntarily. Now, anytime you have all and voluntarily together, it does make you question either, but the idea was that they would all have fairly uniform, fairly consistent academic standards with what third graders should do, fifth graders would do, et cetera, and that the measures of those would be consistent so that theoretically we could compare that child in Spooner, Wisconsin, sitting at a third grade reading level, comparing that child with a child in Yuma, Arizona. And so it was this idea that it would be voluntary, that it would help for uniformity, and this was always a cry of educational reformers, it would help efficiency. And some states had fairly long adoption periods and chances for public comment and rolled these out. And while I don't think anybody tried to be duplicitous at all in Wisconsin, we had a short time of public comment, no particular presentations, no particular statewide initiatives, no particular statewide discussions. And they were adopted back in 2010 in Wisconsin.
Oh.
And with the idea that they would be rolling out over time. Now, the fun thing about the Common Core standards is we have them in math, and we have them in English, which is really basically reading or literacy skills. The ones that Wisconsin has adopted, and most of the states, are skills-based. They've tried to stay away, if any of the listeners remember the, quote, history wars of the 1990s, that certainly raised Rush Limbaugh's ratings. And they attacked things like, you know, George Washington's mentioned 9 times and Harriet Tubman 13.
Yes.
Holy cow, what's more important? That kind of a thing. They've tried to steer clear of those in these. Interestingly, Minnesota has not adopted the science standards. They've just adopted the English or literacy standards. And just recently, a number of states, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Georgia, have begun to look at pulling out formally or finding out the cost associated with this and just saying, we don't have the money to be able to do this. So I think it's like getting to know your brother-in-law a little bit better. Sometimes the more you find out, you don't like them quite so much. And now it's like, gee, they were great at the beginning, but... And what makes this so much fun for people who like politics, and maybe you can get the political junkie to talk about this sometime,
sure,
is you're getting this interesting mix of ultra-liberal groups who are opposed to the Common Core standards and Tea Party groups who are opposed to it on issues of sovereignty, or these are local issues, not standardized national issues. So, but Wisconsin is officially part of it, but the assessment measures are going to be rolled out slowly, and they're eventually going to plug into that state report card where we get the A through F measures of schools. So we're moving along the track, but they're moving slowly, and the Joint Finance Committee has asked for a report due to them by November 1st, November 1st, so we'll see if it gets handed in on time, that asks for sort of an accounting of what's this going to cost, how does this compare with the model academic standards, and do we need them?
Mm-hmm. It sounds pretty fuzzy, really.
Yeah, it is, mm-hmm. But it's, so it's kind of a work in progress, but people are asking questions. And so you're getting this interesting mix with vouchers and legislatures and fundings and schools. Now Common Core is getting mixed in, and people are saying, gee, what exactly does this mean?
Right. We are going to take our many phone calls. Our lines are really filled up here, and we have some email comments, too. We decided right before school starts, it has started, I know, in some areas of Wisconsin, that it would be a good time to look at whether or not there have been substantial changes to the way we teach our children that we'll notice when school really gets in full swing in just a couple weeks now. What about Common Core? What about funding for the arts? What about something we've discussed frequently, and that's testing and a report card for schools? We have a listener who wants to ask that question. The amount of money for schools, school voucher programs, the expansion of the voucher program, not large, but an expansion to private schools and religious schools in the state, part of the budget. So here is how you reach us. Let me give you our email, which will be more satisfactory at the moment. It's talk@wpr.org. Keep the phone number in mind, 800-486-8655. Our email, our Facebook, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Steve Correa is our guest, and Steve is Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. He is a former high school social studies teacher and joins us frequently to talk about education topics. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tom is our next caller from Tomahawk. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Well, I'm going to move away from the arts here. By the way, Steve, you and I served on my Cartoonian State Committee at one time.
Oh, wasn't Michael, what a gem for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yes, I was sorry he left.
Yes.
Anyway, I have been
very much
interested in the expansion of the voucher program, and I particularly decided I ought to read some of the laws, like the Act 25 expanded in 2006, and the particularly the accreditation agencies that are specified in that law. As it turns out, all but one are religious affiliations, have religious affiliations. For example, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Association that accredits its own schools. And by law, it's legal by Act 25. I got a hold of their criteria. they're very religiously dominated and oriented to their own religious beliefs, which seem to be like going over the line. And nobody seems to raise this question at all, so I am. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the call.
It's a really good question, and of course, if we're going to have people out there actually reading what the legislature passes, there's no telling what could happen here. So, and that's obviously a good thing. One of the things that Tom is talking about here with the expansion of school choice or the vouchers program in Wisconsin, I think it's important to keep in mind that what was just passed by Joint Finance and then the governor signed it is really almost symbolic, but it also portends changes that will be coming in the future. Put that in context. We have almost 25,000 students in Milwaukee alone that are already a part of the school choice program. This just adds 500 more students for this year, 13-14, and then it expands it to 1,000 in 14-15, at which point our governor was quoted as saying that once we have the evidence that it works, then we'll feel more confident expanding it. One could argue about the logic of that, but the idea is that we already have, like I say, 25,000 students involved in this in the state. The schools that participate in 13-14 will have 5 years to be able to produce the evidence that their students are performing at an academically acceptable level. And DPI was given some pretty specific orders from Joint Finance to be able to report data in the exact same way, in the exact same manner across public schools and schools part of the choice program. So some of the things that Tom's talking about, though, is embedded in that is the array and constellation of evidence that the choice schools can bring forward will be or might be fundamentally different than the evidence that public schools are bringing forward. It is not yet decided for those choice schools and those choice students, what are the measures of academic performance, and will those really be able to be measured apples to apples with the public schools? So it's not that the choice schools won't have to produce evidence. It's the validity of the evidence that those choice schools would be, have to produce that has people asking questions or definitions or refinement.
And Professor Correa, you mentioned those 500 additional students. Where will they be? Are they all over the state? What schools have been selected? Is it a balance of northern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin?
That's a really good question, and I don't think that has been decided yet. It will be decided soon because, of course, they have to know what bus to get on in a couple weeks. But the idea is that there can be up to 25 schools selected, and those 500 students. Now, if you think about these numbers, we're not talking large numbers at this point, but of course, this is the old camel's nose under the tent kind of idea. But the idea is that it would be no more than 25 schools, and it will be the 25 schools that have these, that have the greatest representation for these 500 students. And so, and there have been the GRACE, the Green Bay Area Catholic Educational System schools applied, a very phenomenal high school, Notre Dame High School and Academy in Green Bay applied. Some private schools all around the state applied, and it'll be the schools that are matched with the highest number of students that applied. So some of these could be fairly modest numbers in the first year. You know what? A dozen or more. So, but they represent the entire state, but of course, primarily among populated areas because that's what it takes.
And let me ask you, there are some, as you well know, who have said what we're witnessing is an assault on public education. Others are saying, well, we've done a certain kind of model for so long, maybe this might work. Maybe it may help at-risk students or make students more excited about school. Do you know what the genesis is for all of this and where things are going, or are we muddling along in the middle right now and we don't know where it's going?
Well, I think that this is a political decision. This is not an educational, and I cringe when people use the term moral. Whenever anybody mixes morality with these things, their descriptions, I just have to shake my head and really wonder what kind of hyperbole they join in. The point is that you are, the attempt here is to create a parallel system to a statewide system that is among one of the finest in the country. Now, that doesn't mean it's perfect everywhere, and we know there's issues in some places. But the idea is that eventually we will probably have, and I was crunching some numbers here before to kind of look at some of these. In about 5 years, we would have spent in the state of Wisconsin about $200 million on private education in K-12 through the voucher program. Now, those are dollars that will not be going to public education. Now, people talk about choices, and it's my child, and it's my tax dollars, but we've never had the option to be able to decide the roads that I want built or those types of things. But education, this is political, and this allows our governor to be able to have a national audience, to be able to have immense legitimacy, to be able to say he has brought these core conservative values to bear on education in the state of Wisconsin, and I can do the same for you.
Right.
It is not based on evidence that would... Now, the thing we have to be careful with evidence is, the latest is, we don't have any evidence that it does any harm. And that's basically, I think, what will eventually be proven. It's not a whole lot better. It's not a whole lot worse. It's about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of education is the same.
Mm-hmm.
However, if parents are happy, children are happy, schools are happy. And if you get to make a choice, of course, you're probably going to be invested in that. But a lot of people like their public schools, too. But this wouldn't be a diversion of this amount of money based on that, well, it can't be worse. It's probably not a whole lot better. So it's a political motivation that does it. And, by the way, they've been very successful at doing it, and they deserve a lot of credit politically because they've been consistent and they've been organized, and this is what they've got to show for it. And, of course, looking to the future, they see growth in this area.
Email from a listener. Can you talk about Wisconsin's school report card program? Every school is given a grade based on many criteria, including test scores for math and English. Unfortunately, that puts pressure on administrators to move resources away from other content areas. In my school building, we lost 2 of 6 science teachers and 2 of 6 geography teachers, and this allowed adding 2 math teachers and 2 English teachers.
Well, the idea with the Wisconsin School Report Card, it also is derived from No Child Left Behind, and it's part of these uniform measures that, again, Maine to Florida to California, it's and the idea is that we have these consistent measures to be able to compare schools no matter where you are. Wisconsin's is slowly rolling out. Some of the schools got sort of low report cards last time, but they indicated, doesn't this sound like a seventh grader? They got a lot of incompletes and because the evidence hadn't been collected yet or wasn't yet available. So in 2 years' time, this theoretically will be there. And test scores count for so much. Attendance counts for so much. School readiness programs, do we have things that are pointing students towards career opportunities? Those kind of things. Now, the individual decisions made in that school district, of course, I can't speak to, but I do know that the test scores that they look at in there would be derived from, it's a great way that our conversation comes back together, from those measures in the Common Core assessment.
Ah, I see.
And so geography is not tested in that. Now, I love geographer. I work with one of the best geographers, I think, in the United States, Dr. Mark Bakkenauer, National Geographic works with. We love it at St. Norbert. But it's not, those scores don't translate directly onto the test scores within the report card. So, you know, districts are going to concentrate on these because if that's where you get the attention measured and that's what the light is shined on, you are going to be able to try to bring to bear resources to be able to get those scores up.
More phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're spending this hour close to when school begins, if it hasn't already, for you and your family, if you're a teacher, for your students. Our guest is looking at a wide range of issues. There's been so much in the news lately. We're looking at Common Core, the Wisconsin report card, the expansion, small though it may be, does it mean that we're going to see a complete change in the way we educate students in the not-too-distant future? A slight increase in the number of students who will be a part of the voucher program in the state of Wisconsin. And we're talking about, well, we started the program with this really neat initiative launched by the Kennedy Center, selecting Madison as the 12th city in the country for the Any Given Child program, in which arts education plan will be designed to reach every public school student in grades K through 12. It's a real community effort and a good one at that. Eric in Green Bay is our next caller for Professor Steve Correa, who is our guest. He is an associate professor of education at St. Norbert College. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question for the guest is, I've been asked to be an instructor at a small elementary school in Green Bay to do night classes this coming fall, and the school is described, I guess in general terms, as a progressive school in which they do not emphasize grades, but rather they emphasize learning hands-on skills and teaching these skills to the children in different forms during class. Can you comment on what you think of this approach? Is this a new and innovative approach? Has this been out and around for a while? And what do you think of it?
And what would you teach, Eric?
I'll be teaching how to make paracord bracelets and how to use them in a practical application in the real world.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Interesting. Well, hands-on learning has occurred ever since the first person picked up something and got a splinter. And hopefully then somebody said to them, well, you probably don't want to do that again, or did we need to be able to say that to them again? I think that the idea here is that before, and I like reading John Dewey, and one of the things that John Dewey really cautioned people about was staying away from either ors or black and whites. And one of Dewey's basic ideas was that, you know, it's experiment. It's find what works. What works for one group doesn't always work with another group. And we can't predict the future. We can't say exactly what skills people are going to need in the future. So it sounds like some of the activity that you're going to be involved with is probably the best teaching takes place with getting students to have that metacognition, sorry, professor word, to think about, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? How did it go? You know, I don't know if Eric golfs. But you can go to the driving range and beat your brains out and not be a very good golfer. But if you have someone that helps you to think about, is your swing inside out? How are you standing? You know, put those pieces together. That's what's good. I don't think that these students will necessarily have a career in bracelet construction. But if they learn some social skills, if they're talking with the student next to them, how about the wonder of excitement of going back into the building? Isn't school a great place to be when you feel like you're welcome there and you want to be there? And learning is considered lifelong, which is what you were mentioning at the very beginning about the excitement of being back
sure.
at school. So, you know, I think one can incubate lots of different skill sets and interests in students if they like to be there and they want to be there. And, you know, teachers that are excited about what they're teaching have students that are excited about what they're doing. It can be Hank Hill in shop class teaching the students how to work a plane, or it can be somebody teaching calculus. It's wonderful. But measures don't always help unless they help the student to better understand themselves and want to learn more. So it sounds like the sky's the limit, and that would be a very exciting thing to be involved
and
in.
And have a good time, Eric. Let's talk about teaching for a moment, Professor Correa. Do you have any evidence that the teaching profession, because of all the controversies concerning education and what happened politically in Wisconsin, is becoming less attractive to young people? I've heard that it is. There aren't as many young people taking education as a major. Is that true?
Well, at our school, we have noticed that there is not the annual small but notable increase. We've leveled off on our numbers. So I think that there will always be enthusiasm for young people wanting to take on the challenges, whether they're fully aware of them or not, of education. But all you have to do is talk to teachers and find out that there are a lot of teachers out there that have not had a raise in 3, 4, 5 years. Their benefits costs have gone up. Of course, the cost of living has gone up. This is an interesting way to look at it. If you were a teacher with 2 children and you've been teaching 4 or 5 years, do you know that the chances are really good that you would be below the federal poverty level and qualify to have your students as part of the voucher program, school choice program in the state of Wisconsin?
Oh, that's remarkable.
Because you would be earning under 185% of the federal poverty level. Now, that depends on districts and those kind of things, but it's also not hugely above. There's an irony there.
Yes.
Teaching used to be a way for people to enter and maintain a middle-class existence. So there are benefits economically beyond that. So the fact of the matter is you can't maintain a middle-class or a near-middle-class existence, especially now. Teachers haven't had those salary increases. They're not going to come. Benefit increases, that's not going to take place. So I think long-term, people will not be able to hone their craft and improve themselves over this 20, 25-year career. So you'll probably see more turnover. Now, that is in every field. That's economics speaking. That's not philosophy or pedagogy. People just are not going to be able to afford it. However, will there be people wanting to stand in line? Sure. But, you know, you lose those experienced voices no matter where you are. That institutional memory disappears. So, no, it will change over time, but that's more economics.
Well, I think what you said is very troubling. It indicates how we don't value teachers as we should. It is such an important profession, and it requires a whole lot of work and heart.
I think that that's part of the, now it's toned down lately, but some of that might be because we're sort of in the off season politically speaking. There has been this war on teachers and this war on education. Now, sometimes declared, sometimes it certainly hasn't been a cold war, but teachers have become this target, as have public servants. And they are seen with a target, and in attempting to protect themselves and their profession and their families, they've been portrayed by much in the media, not all, and politically, as selfish and self-centered and really not concerned about real issues. And so to take that debate back is challenging, because the avenue for that, which whether it's been WEAC or public unions, they are hobbled at best, or a lot of districts, of course, have decertified. So, the teachers are back on their heels, as are public servants. I really see them very similarly positioned. And it is a challenge. And, this part hasn't happened before. Now, the pendulum will swing, but, for now, one has to be a little bit more bright-eyed, a little bit more bushy-tailed, and a little bit younger to not really see the full constellation of some of the challenges that teaching's having right now.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking a number of topics related to education as we get close to the beginning of school. Professor Steve Correa is our guest. He is an associate professor of education at St. Norbert College and joins us frequently to talk about all of the issues relating to education, and there have been many the past few years. More phone calls momentarily. Eric, thanks for your call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And stay with us next hour. We'll be talking about the Supreme Court ruling in June that struck down a key provision of the Voting Rights Act, allowing 15 previously restricted states to now pass laws without pre-approval from the Justice Department. One of those states passed a very controversial law just yesterday. It was signed into law in North Carolina. So looking at how those states are responding and if Congress will move forward. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So let's go back to phone calls. Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good afternoon, Kathleen, and to your guests. I was a graduate of a two-year normal school, County Normal, about 50 years ago. And starting the spring of the, we had a lab school downstairs, and starting the spring of your freshman year, you picked up two practice classes twice a week. You might have third grade math and sixth grade social studies. You rotated those for one whole year. But what we had going for us, there were 30 of us in that second year, that sophomore class. We were continually trading ideas back and forth among us because we were surrounded by students from the day we walked in until we graduated 2 years later. And the normal schools, as far as I was concerned anyways, and a lot of us, they just did an excellent job at the time of training teachers. I wonder if your guests could comment.
All right, Professor Correa.
Oh, weren't those just wonderful, wonderful laboratories to be able to try those things with? And he's exactly right. Now, the first one in the state was in Wausau, interestingly.
Huh.
Most of the UW schools outside of Madison were started as normal schools. And even in Wisconsin, we had county-based teacher training institutions at one time. So there's a good long tradition that way. Those then sort of evolved to what we called lab schools. And it's the John Dewey Lab School was at the University of Chicago. The modern iteration of that, both Arnie Duncan graduated from and the Obama girls attended before moving to D.C. And but the caller, he hearkens back to a time that those were wonderful learning opportunities because, back to Eric in Green Bay, you really were learning by doing and trying and experimenting and then pulling back, probably with a really good teacher, instructor, professor, and saying, what happened? Why did that work? How did that work? Did it work with the other students? You know, somebody really engaging you in really good questioning. Now, the overall professionalization of teaching, much like if you think about the difference between LPNs and RNs, RNs have that bachelor's degree, this was sort of the LPN version of that. And the overall professionalization of that made the normal schools decrease or disappear. Some schools did hang on to the lab school component. But there's a very few number of those, probably a handful in the United States right now. Now, there are some teacher professional development schools that have good partnerships with schools, and they do those things. But it was that intimate, daily, sustained contact that the caller talks about that made for one heck of a phenomenal learning opportunity. And boy, that's hard to replicate.
Thanks, Eugene. Stuff. Thanks for your call. Ron in East Troy. Hi.
Hi. I want to get back to the teachers, and I wanted to ask, with all the efforts to quantify the Common Core standards and quantify what's a good school, what's a bad school, how much of that is aimed at teachers? And is that collateral damage, or are teachers actually the target in sights when they are trying to get back to the elusive ways to evaluate teachers?
That, you know, it's a really good question. If I could, you know, anybody listening might like to go on to the Brookings Institute. They recently released this paper that talked about states that were judged to have high academic standards actually perform just about the same on the NAEP, that's the National Assessment of Educational Progress, as states that have low academic standards. So what we're saying is that whether a state spends a lot of time on Common Core or no time on Common Core, it doesn't seem to affect their overall academic performance statewide. However, the caller is right in that now getting bundled in this are attempts at teacher measurement, teacher effectiveness measurement, and doing that within measuring some magical numerical score from this year to next year to the year after that. Anybody that has taught knows that a child and their ability to learn is a product of a group of people in a school. Even the reading teacher knows that that has to be reinforced back in the reg ed classroom by the regular teacher, or reading needs to be also be related to story problems in the math class, et cetera, et cetera. So the fallacy that this can be traced to one teacher, one attempt, and therefore then it gives you this perfect snapshot of one teacher's efforts or effectiveness, it's just not true. Schools don't work that way.
Thanks, Ron, for the call. Let's get to Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I have never heard the point raised questioning the validity of the voucher program, of the push to voucherize our schools. The point being that they always claim that this is choice for the parents and for the students. Wisconsin has had a policy for at least the last 16 years of any student who does not like the school that is that they whose district they live in has the choice of applying to any other school they wish to, and all these schools have limited numbers of spaces, but to the best of my knowledge, virtually everybody gets into the school that they request to be transferred to. The state funds then go to the school that they transfer into, and the only major difference there is that then the student and or parents are responsible for transporting the school the child to and from the new school. But school choice exists in the public school system.
It's not something we hear much about, do we, Professor Correa?
No, and it does exist. And in fact, some school districts benefit greatly from it. The Ashwaubenon School District in Brown County, very strong district. But it's had overall permanent population decline for school age. But they have a number of students that opt in to the Ashwaubenon School District from surrounding. So for them, it's a net gainer. But the caller is exactly right. Now, some districts do limit this. It's a very controlled program with, you know, registration times and all those other kind of things. But I believe the caller is reinforcing the earlier observation that I made. So, of course, I'm going to agree with her, so she's brilliant, that this is a political thing. It is not an educational thing. And, you know, so the rationale and the momentum for this is coming through the political process. It hasn't boiled up through the educational one.
Thank you, Stella, for the call. I do want to, we only have 40 seconds left, but it's a subject for another program. I did say that we would talk about the Race to the Top, giving a learning grant to the state to continue current early childhood programs throughout the state. How valuable are those programs, Steve?
I think that, you know, early childhood sets the stage, sets the direction earlier in Wisconsin, and I think it was maybe 11 and a half million. And it's reinforcement for people in DPI and those programs that we're going in a good direction, and the Obama administration has encouraged that. So it is a good sign that there's some support for initiatives at those early ages.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you all set for school? When do you start there? After Labor Day?
We start week after next. No, the private schools start a little bit earlier. So, yeah. So, no, I better do my homework.
Get your supplies and get ready to go, sir.
Oh, I love supply shopping. Yeah.
I do, too. That's my favorite. Supply shopping. Oh, I miss those days. Maybe we should just do it anyhow. Thank you so much for being with us and commenting on a wide range of topics.
Oh, very happy to be here, as always. Thank you.
Professor Steve Correa, our guest this hour. He is Associate Professor, Department of Education at St. Norbert College, and does work in interesting areas. The history of school reform over the last 100 years. We get caught up in the moment, but he knows the history. Also, the evolution of measuring successful schools and the changing expectations of high schools. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley, who produced this program, and thank you for all of your calls. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about voting the next hour of our program. This is the Ideas Network.